Blog Talk Radio.
Young Castro from the Outlaw. It's your boy Al Capone.
What's that? And this bootleg the Rock Capone from the Dayton family.
Baby, this your boy Al Capone.
What up, y'all? This is Eshawn.
Yo, 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 what's up? This your boy C-Murder, and I'm chilling with my boy Scott Beta, and you're listening to the Murder Master Music Show. It's the hottest thing out right now, you heard me? Keep it true.
Episode 180, Murder Master Music Show. We have a special guest tonight. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
What's up with the prayers?
And we got
this
a special...
Out here enjoying this weather, finally.
Finally, yeah, right. We need it. Special guest tonight. Return visit from the one and only Mr. Jerry Heller. He's going to be joining us, episode 180. You know what I'm saying? Once again, I'm honored to have him back on the show. This dude, he's accomplished a lot of shit. You know, not just with Ruthless, you know, he had a huge career
right.
before Ruthless. Brought over, all kinds of different people from Europe. Did stuff with Creedence, Marvin Gaye. The list goes on and on. Some of the biggest names, in rock and roll and hip hop. He's going to be calling in shortly. Right around the time Easy passed 20 years ago. I still think if Easy was alive, he would have definitely contributed a lot more to the game, man. That dude was a fucking visionary.
Yeah, man. We lost a good one with that one.
Yeah. Charitable contributions. He helped people. He wasn't one of these crazy motherfuckers like Suge running people over and shit.
Right.
Having all kinds of episodes in court. Shit's kind of crazy with Suge, but there's a lot going on right now, man. You got that NWA movie, which, that's where Suge ran over old boy, and killed a dude, ran over another guy.
Right. Supposedly your friend, too. That's what's crazy about the shit. Like, fuck, you hit one of your buddies or something. Like, that dumb shit always follow motherfuckers, though, man,
Yeah.
Lessons to all you motherfuckers out there and everybody that's listening, man. You continue to do dumb shit and you get away with it eventually. I'm going to come back and bite you in your goddamn ass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. People don't understand, you're going to have to suffer the consequences of your own actions. And that dude, shit. He's got a list, as long as John Holmes' dead dick. The motherfucker is just, I don't know, man. He deserves to be where he's at, man. The guy's a menace to society. He's fucking killing people. What do you expect? But enough of that, motherfucker. Let's bring on the real motherfucker, the one and only Jerry Heller. How you doing, Jerry?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I'm here.
Oh,
hey,
man.
What's going on, Jerry?
Good to have you back, man.
Thanks, man.
We just had a dedication show to Eazy-E. He's been gone 20 years, and most of us can't believe it, man. How do you get through? With your friend not being here. I mean, 20 years or 2 years, it's still got to be hard.
It's very, very difficult, man. I think about him all the time, and I think about what he would have accomplished if he was still here, and. The guy was an incredible visionary and a good friend and like a son to me, well as being my next-door neighbor. So, and it's very, very difficult for me.
Yeah, I could imagine, man. Me and Prez was last week. It was like 20 years, man. The years just flow by. It just don't seem, like it's been 20 years because I think they're preserving Easy's legacy. To the fullest, so to speak. I don't know. I haven't seen nothing on the movie yet. I'm just real anxious and curious to see how the movie gonna turn out or whatever. But everything that Sergio and a lot of other guys doing to preserve Easy for the younger generation, man, I think it's real good, man.
Yeah, Sergio's great, man. A lot of people aren't great, but Sergio's great, and he's devoted most of his life to Eazy-E CPT, and. He's a real fan.
Yeah, and you know, back in the day when you know, after Easy had passed, like when Ruthless had didn't have a website or it was down, you know, he put up his site, and that's what you had. And he gave you so much information. If it wasn't for him, for a period of time, there wouldn't have been hardly anything of Easy Online. You know, so shout out to Sergio and you know what I'm saying, the whole crew over there. You're a big part of that. You participated in his documentary. What was it like being in the Ruthless Memories DVD?
Well, you know, I got a lot of respect for those guys, and they're dedicated to Easy, and I thought it would be great for me to support them, which I did. They came to my house. We did 6 or 7 segments, and, you know, I got nothing but respect for those brothers.
Good people. Good people in a bad business. You know. But, yeah,
or maybe,
yeah,
bad, maybe bad people in a good business, man.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But you're originally from Cleveland. That's kind of ironic. The biggest group, you know, outside NWA that you assign is from Cleveland. Did you ever have talks with Bone about that back in the day, like where you grew up and where they grew up and stuff?
Well, we grew up in the same neighborhood. It's just that, you know, I was so much older than them that things had changed, you know, by the time they got there. So, yeah, we discussed it a little, but not too much.
Yeah. Last time you were on the show, the Straight Outta Compton movie was in its infancy. Did you see the trailer of it? And if so, what did you think of it? And what did
you
think
of
Paul
Giamatti? I haven't seen anything yet. No. And, you know, I'm waiting until the movie comes out, and then I'll be there in the front row with my lawyer looking at make sure that it's an accurate movie.
Yeah.
Because they didn't reach out to me at all to give any kind of advice or insight or background. So it's hard for me to believe that, that they got it right.
And yeah, I find that kind of crazy that, you know, even though Cube and Dre are the two that left, I still find it crazy that they didn't have some type of consult with you on set like they did with Randy and Yella and other people, because you were the guy that you know, jump-started the thing. And you were there from the jump. I mean, you have to have input. Did you feel slighted at all?
Well, I didn't expect them to, because, you know, that's the way they are. But I certainly thought that Universal or Warner Brothers or one of their companies would insist on it. And I'm really shocked that even though they didn't reach out, that somebody didn't reach out. You know,
yeah.
To make
even
sure that
Paul
the thing
Giamatti, I mean, he could have reached out to you from an actor standpoint, and you know, a lot of actors do that. Like Johnny Depp with the guy from Blow, for example. He went and met with him in prison, and you know.
Well, I'm sure that he was told not to do it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they told him to stay away, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, they can't, you know, what's done is done, and what's set in stone is set in stone. They can't rewrite you out of history.
Well,
you know,
they can.
So hopefully they pay homage to you.
They can, and they probably will. They can't write me out of it, but they sure can rewrite it. And,
to what they see fit.
Yeah, if it's accurate, then I'm a fan just like everyone else. If it's not accurate, then I'm not going to just sit back and just let them say whatever they want.
Yeah. I can imagine if it's not accurate, you're gonna give them a right left and say, "Goddamn, they ruthless." Yeah, but have you seen Dre or anybody since this?
Do you know that I have never seen Cube from the day that he left Ruthless? I never saw him again. I never saw him anywhere, at a Laker game or Dodger game, or, and I never saw him again. I've seen Dre a couple of times. His mother lives two streets away, you know, and I see her all the time. And I used to see him once in a while, and we were always pleasant to each other. I'd run into him at the gas station or whatever, you know. And I don't see him much anymore because he's moved. But, yeah, we were always pleasant and tried to keep it superficial and pleasant whenever I'd see him. I got nothing against Dre. I think Dre is the most talented guy of the entire rap era.
What did you think of that $1 billion deal he got with those headphones? Did you hear about that? Supposedly they cost $14 to make. That just came out the other day. But what did you think of that? That's amazing for someone to get $1 billion in the hip hop industry. You helped his career along.
Not only that, I made his original deal with Jimmy Iovine. So, you know, I was responsible for him being at Interscope. And I think, you know, I give him credit. It's a huge deal. You know, I've heard other people say, you know, I don't have a set, but I've heard other people say there's a lot better headphones around, so I don't know. You know, because I've never tried them. And they look good.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see that he's so successful. It was a $3.4 billion deal. I mean, that's a very substantial deal.
Yeah, that's, you know, with that kind of money, though, you know, you can accomplish a lot of good, or you can also accomplish a lot of bad. We'll have to see what happens. But it always shocked me that the other guys like Ren and Yella, they never really got the props that I feel that they deserve. Do you feel the same way about them guys?
I think they were certainly part of, you know, the most important group of the 20th century. So,
yeah. Sure,
some people made a bigger contribution than others did. But, I think it would have been nice if they would have got more credit than they've gotten over the years.
Yeah, most
definitely. If Easy was alive, I guarantee you they would have gotten credit.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, Ren is a hell of a lyricist himself. And I always thought that Easy and Ren, like when, you know, Two Hard Mothers, I always thought that they would have made a great duo group, you know. Did they ever talk about that in the future?
I don't know what, you know, sometimes they would talk about things that I was when I wasn't there. But I think it's a good idea. And, you know, Ren was a terrific rapper, and he was a good friend of Easy's. The first time I met Easy, he was with Ren. So I'm sure that at some stage, you know, something would have happened. I did make a deal for Ren at Capitol to put out three records, and he put out that CPO record, which still is a really good record.
Yeah, we had him on the show not too long ago.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in years and years and years.
Yeah, we've had a huge majority of the Ruthless staff. We even had Stefan come on the Easy East show.
Yeah, Stefan's a good
week.
Guy. I like Stefan. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he said him and Easy were going to do some stuff with a children's line, I guess, like children's books or something.
Well, you know, Easy was very, you know, Easy loved children.
Yeah, he contributed to a lot of charities, obviously. What were some of your fondest memories of Eazy-E?
Well, I mean, there's just so many, you know, that, I mean, he was such a good person. He was a good guy. And a lot of the memories that I have are just really funny things that he did, you know. And, you know, I just can't, you know, I just don't want to start reminiscing about all that old stuff, you know. I got a book out, and if people, you know, the book tells the truth about everything, like I always do.
The book is available right now on Amazon, I believe. What's it called?
Yeah, you can still buy it on Amazon. And, you know, it's really well written, and it's very good. So, and it tells a lot of stuff that, you know, from the inside. And like I said,
oh, yeah, it's a good read.
It's very
good read, for sure.
Yeah.
You go off in the, you go all the way back into the 60s with it, talk about Creedence and stuff, and, you know, what was John Fogerty like? I mean, is he a pretty cool guy, or?
Yeah, he was not such a cool guy, but he was an incredible talent. And, you know, he was the driving force behind Creedence. And, you know, just like everybody else, he had his problems. You know, he didn't let the other guys go on stage when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, but,
that's
you
crazy.
Know, the guy's one of the most important rock and rollers in the history of our music, the same as the Beach Boys and Rolling Stones and the Beatles. I mean, John Fogerty's, you know, and Creedence were a very, very, very important group.
Yeah.
Right. Now, Jerry, when you first started off in the game, did you know or did you ever think that your legacy would be the legacy that you have now? Like, you would have been so influential to so many influential groups, like you mentioned in Creedence, and how far NWA to me, like you said earlier, was probably one of the most important groups of any genre of music. But when you first started out, did you ever think that you would be involved with groups like that? And is that what you set out to do when you first got in the game?
Man, I set out to make a living just like everybody else, you know? And, I just had the ability to recognize talent. I brought Elton John to this country for his first tour. I did the first Pink Floyd tour. I represented Journey and Styx and REO Speedwagon and Marvin Gaye and the Four Tops and Martha and the Vandellas and ELO, Journey, Little Feat, Boz Scaggs, did the Crosby Nash acoustic tour. But it wasn't really until when I met Easy on March 3rd of 87 that I really felt the importance of what NWA was capable of achieving.
It's amazing that you saw that, because at that time, you know, McCullough had all kinds of other legends, I believe. I believe Ice-T was on McCullough, Two Live Crew, Rodney O, Joe Cooley. McCullough was already making a name for itself. What did you see in Easy and NWA that you didn't see in those other guys?
Well, remember that I was managing most of those guys in the beginning. Egyptian Lover, World Class Wrecking Crew, CIA. I was managing LA Dream Team, JJ Fad. It just when I heard when Easy played me Boys in the Hood, then it took me back to the rebellion of the Rolling Stones, the poetry of Gil Scott-Heron, and the anger of the Black Panthers. So when I heard that music, it just blew me away. And then when I said to him, what's the name of the group? He said, NWA. I said, what's that stand for? No Whites Allowed? And he laughed and he said, that's pretty close. And then he played me Straight Outta Compton, you know, Straight Outta Compton, crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube, and a band called Niggers with Attitudes. I went, whoa, this is just too serious, man. I said, this is really heavy. And I was able to recognize and equate that to what was happening in the middle 60s and, you know, in rock and roll in the San Francisco area. So it was something that I recognized and equated to and went with. And, you know, we became business associates that day, March 3rd of 1987.
The day you met. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And then you guys started pressing up Wax almost immediately, no?
Yeah. We started pressing up. We had a little deal at McCullough, and we'd sell the records out of the trunks of our cars or take them down to the Rhodium to Steve Yano. And we created a buzz, you know, a real buzz. And then I knew that we needed some kind of important distribution. And I had known Brian Turner for many years and respected him as a record man, even though he hadn't realized his potential yet. he had a big record with the California Raisins, which was a, I mean, sold several million copies. So I talked him into coming down to see NWA, and I think there was a shooting there the first night. I think we wound up crawling out of the door on the floor. But, you know, he believed in my vision, and he put his money where his mouth was. And then we did have some differences later on over Ice Cube, but Brian Turner was a force to be reckoned with. He was a terrific record man. And his partner, Mark Cerami, was really one of the best distribution guys I ever met.
Yeah, Priority put out a lot of hits over the years. And then later on, all that No Limit stuff, just amazing amount of platinum hits. But you said you managed CIA at that time. You had Ice Cube already under your management. Did you see anything in him with CIA, or was he different back then?
Actually, I had very little interface with CIA. They hadn't put out a record yet. They were on Alonzo Williams' label. Alonzo was taking care of them. I was mostly watching out for the World Class Wrecking Crew. And, you know, Alonzo, people don't realize how important Alonzo was. He was one of the most important of the early guys in rap, even though he wasn't a gangster rapper. I mean, World Class Wrecking Crew were sort of the Temptations of rap music, man. But Alonzo was an important guy, and, you know, Jinx was with CIA, and, you know, Alonzo was right there, you know, at the beginning, and he pressed at McCullough also, as did Hammer and Egyptian Lover and Dream Team and Timex Social Club, Jay King. So, you know, there was a lot of action going on at Bobby Jimmy and the Critters. There was a lot of action going on at McCullough.
Yeah, the foundation of West Coast hip-hop, you know, was pretty much right there. Like I said, you had the two live crew even, which is great.
Yeah, two live crew, they were there. And then they had a promotion guy that lived in Florida named Luther Campbell.
Yep.
Yeah, and he did all of our promotion. Luke Skywalker, we called him. And he was a good promotion man, but nobody ever equaled Doug Young. Doug Young, he was the guy. Doug Young was the greatest promotion man of all time. He was a promotion man for us, and he beat those streets, man, from San Diego to Seattle every day. And he was out there getting our records played and sold and everything else. And then he wound up at Death Row, and he did a really good job at Death Row.
Yeah.
I give a lot of props to Doug Young. But when we're giving props to people, there's nobody that was more important than a little 5,000-watt radio station at the top of Alvarado Street, man. 1580 K-Day. The only radio station in America that played gangster rap, man. So anybody that wants to give them props, they better start giving props to to Greg Mack and the Mack Attack and Julio G and Tony G and the Mixmasters. And I mean, those were important guys in the early days of rap music.
It broke a lot of records. Yeah. A lot of records. I didn't want to go there, but you mentioned Death Row. You said on our show one of the times you were on here that you had to talk Easy out of killing Suge Knight, and you wish you had. Since you said that, he has ran somebody over and killed them on videotape. I would take it you still stand by what you said?
I think that even more so now, I think that Suge Knight is an evil human being. And I always said when Suge Knight started to get involved, you know, because he was a bodyguard at Ruthless. You know, he drove Dre around sometimes, and usually he was with the DOC, who I feel was probably the greatest pure rapper. He and Rakim were the two greatest pure rappers that I ever heard. But he was a bad guy. And, it, you know, I think he was a bad guy then, and he's a worse guy now. And he's, I mean, the guy is lucky, and I think that, like they say in Vegas to O.J. Simpson, you know, it's payback time, man.
Yeah, pretty much. You know what I'm saying? Keep fucking around. It's going to eventually come back to bite you in your ass.
Yeah,
what do you think
his
Vinny
karma,
the
man.
Chin, his Vinny the Chin act that he has in court, all the different things that's going on. Did you see any of that? Like him?
Yeah, I saw it, but I wasn't there. And I never comment on things that, you know, I try and, you know, be knowledgeable about things that I talk about. And I really have no insight. I have my own feelings. But I have no insight into, you know, what's going on in court. But whatever it is, you know, it'll all come out in the end. I personally feel that, you know, he has a very, very tough road to go here, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like a
$25 million bail?
Yeah.
I mean, I never heard of anything like that in my life. I mean, Phil Spector, who admitted he killed that woman, only got a $3 million bail. I never heard of anything like that in my life. I mean, that's...
But he killed a woman? I didn't even hear about that.
Who, Phil Spector?
Yeah,
oh,
Phil
yeah,
Spector.
Phil Spector.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
My bad. I thought you were talking about Suge. I was like, when did this happen? Was it that video where he's choking that broad on the dance floor? but, yes, Phil Spector, yeah. $25 million, yeah, he's stuck there. That sounded like Pac when he had $1 million bail.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And the thing about it is that, remember, that's how he signed Pac. Pac had a $1.4 million bail, and Suge probably went to Jimmy to get the money, and they got him out and were able to sign him. And now it's very ironic that he would have a $25 million bail.
Yeah. Strong message. Whoever sent it. Shit.
Well, what are you going to do when you got that type of evidence against you? But, you know, it is what it is. You know, he came into Ruthless as a bodyguard. At what point did you realize that this guy is up to no good? And did Eric know before you, or did you know before him?
You know, we looked at things differently, okay? I looked at him as a guy that had a lot of potential that I probably could help in the management business. And he had all his little things that he was doing, you know, this little girl that he was producing and this. He had all his little things. Eric knew he was a problem from the beginning. And that was that meeting when I talked him out of doing what he felt that he wanted to do. And if you know Eric, you know, he was very firm in his ideas. And actually, it turned out that he was right and I was wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
You know, all these years later, you know, does he have any music out there? We had Yellow on the show once. Didn't Yellow say he had some tracks, but he didn't release them because they were diss records or something?
I don't know. I don't know. Yellow is, you know, working with some of Easy's kids, and, you know, I give him props for that. But Yellow was important to Dre's producing team, High Powered Productions, you know? And, you know, he was a real solid. You know, Dre was the brains, but, you know, Yellow was real solid. He was in the studio right next to him day and night, so all the hits that they made at Ruthless, basically, they worked on together.
Yeah, everybody, it was like a team.
Yeah.
He was the clutch, you know, he was the guy they'd bring in, the sixth man, whatever the case may be.
Exactly.
No, we had a guy in the show, I didn't even know he was a part of NWA. He calls himself DJ Speed. What do you know about him?
He was never a part of NWA. No, he wasn't in NWA.
Yeah, I never saw him on the covers or anything. That's why.
Well, he may have been on that one cover where they had a bunch of guys.
Oh, in the posse.
In the alley, you know. But he was never in NWA. He was a gopher. He took Eric's laundry in. You know, he was a friend of Eric's. And then I just found out from Vinny Caruso, the other day I was reading that Vinny Caruso said that that he got in trouble with, because he lived, I think, at one of Eric's houses in Norwalk or something. Eric fired him. But he was never a member of NWA. All the years I was in business with Eric, I probably ran into Speed two or three times. He talked shit about me all the time like he knows something. He's just a punk. And he had nothing to do with NWA. The only outside guy, well, there were two guys that you almost could call members of NWA. One was the DOC. And you really, when you look at NWA, I mean, you got to give him, you know, some props for being there and being in the studio and writing great songs and whatever. And the other was Arabian Prince.
Yeah.
Arabian Prince was an original member of NWA. When I first managed NWA, Arabian Prince was one of the members. So there was no DJ Speed in NWA. He was a high school friend of Eric's or something, and like I say, I think that he took care of Eric's Norwalk house and took in his laundry and stuff like that. He certainly was not a member of NWA. And I read about all these guys on Facebook that are members of NWA. I mean, what was there, 4,000 members of NWA?
Yeah, I always thought there was just a handful myself, yeah.
Everybody was a member of NWA, man.
Well, what about you, Jerry? You were an honorary member, I would imagine.
Well, Eric always said, NWA is me, Dre, Yella, and Jerry Heller. I think that I have that quote somewhere here on a poster. And he always said to me, too bad you can't rap because you're like the second most famous guy at Ruthless. I'd like to do an album with you. But, you know, I was a business guy behind the scenes, and that's all I was really interested in, was making Ruthless into a modern-day Motown. And Eric was interested in that, too. And no matter what kind of diss records there were and everything, I mean, everybody that was at Motown got pretty rich, didn't they?
Yeah.
They all did real well, man.
A lot of plaques.
And a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's about at the end of the day. Making some real money.
Or as Bone Thugs and Harmony says, where's my cheese? I got him in my cheese, man.
Well, you're from Cleveland. Well, you're from Danny Green's neck of the woods, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know Danny Green at all? I mean, that was right.
Well,
around.
I didn't know Danny Green personally, but I was from Cleveland, man. So
you knew, you
know,
the house explosion.
I knew all those guys. You know, my father was. They all went to Glenville High School together, which was, you know, down on 123rd in St. Clair, which was a pretty rough neighborhood. And Lou Wasserman, who was the chairman of the board of MCA, he went to Glenville, graduated with my father. And every major gangster in the world, Mo Dalitz, Ruby Collod, Georgie Gordon, I mean, all of the big Vegas gangsters went to Glenville High School and graduated with my father. They were called the Mayfield Road Mob.
A history right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. I bet you've seen some crazy shit. You said the first NWA concert that Brian Turner was at, there was a shooting.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, you saw that. You must have seen some crazy shit in Cleveland as a kid, no?
Yeah, when I grew up in Cleveland, I mean, you know, when I was young, I mean, there were a lot of teenagers that carried guns then, you know? But it wasn't like it is today with drive-bys and stuff like that. But there were a lot, you know, I grew up with a lot of very tough guys. And Cleveland was a great place to be from. You know, I got a good education there. And then when my father started to make money, which he did, if you look in the book, you'll see a picture there of my dad and mom wearing all white, you know. But I wound up going to Shaker Heights High School, which is one of the great public education systems in America. I mean, we had classes with six or seven people in them. So, I mean, I got a great public school education. And I've always had a great affection for Shaker Heights High School. And that school now is 50% African American, and the standards are higher than they ever were before. So the public school system can work in this country, as Bill Clinton used to say. It just doesn't work, but it can work. And Shaker Heights High School now is a very racially diverse school where there's, I mean, the finest scholars, high school scholars in the world go to Shaker Heights High School.
Yeah. See, and it's history right there, you know. I imagine Busy and Flesh graduated that school with honors. But shout out to Bone Thugs. We had Busy on the show, and he was good flesh. Now we had Lazy on the show, and I got into a screaming match with him. kind of. We were both fucked up pretty much, and one thing led to another, and the F bomb was dropped several times. But you know, nonetheless, shout out to Bone. Man, them dudes sold millions and millions of records. That's another group you're behind. They broke the Beatles records. What was it like to see that?
Well, first of all, the Bone guys were very difficult guys to deal with, okay, as you can imagine. The only one that I speak to now is Busy. The other guys walk around telling people that I killed Eazy-E, which is the most ridiculous thing in the world. I'm the only person that didn't profit from his death, okay? So they walk around telling people that I killed Eazy-E, you know, your friend Lazy and Crazy. But they did something that no other rap group ever did, the way they layered their vocals. And Eazy recognized that. And if Eazy wouldn't have passed away, because I'm telling you, Bone was a full-time job between Eazy and I, if he wouldn't have passed away and they would have put out Crossroads first instead of fifth off that album, and Eazy wouldn't have died, they probably would have been the biggest group in the world. They certainly had the potential to do that and to go all the way. I mean, they did something that nobody else had done.
Yeah, unique sound, yeah.
Yeah, great, great.
Yeah,
great
they
sound,
had the
great sound.
Right, and they had the look and all that shit with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was all together. You know, you probably had some guys that was rapping similar to them or putting it down, but they didn't have the whole. I always thought Bone was a whole package. They all went hand in hand.
Yeah, they were great, and they sold a lot of records, and they should have wound up being as rich as Jay-Z, you know? But,
that guy monopolized the game.
Unfortunately, Eazy passed away and I left. And there was nobody that they respected enough to be able to control them. But they were just a special, special group. And it gave Eazy the opportunity to show Dre that he could do it without him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was very important to me, man.
Produced by my goddamn self, you USOB. I read them liner notes. And
yeah, right.
I kind of knew what was coming, you know, when 5150 dropped, you know. But, man, I wish that would have been. I want to ask you this. I can't ask Eazy, but why the hell did he make that an album? I mean, it was like a teaser. It was four songs. Classic shit, though. But, man, I wanted that shit to be a fucking album.
I think what happened was this. I think that we cut it late in the year, and he wanted to get it out for Christmas, because remember that there was a song on there called what, Merry Motherfucker Father. Christmas.
Yeah.
So I think he wanted to get it out, and you know, Rudy Ray Moore was on it and was a friend of Easy's, and you know, he only worked at a certain pace, and we wanted to get the record out, so he put out 5150 when he did. Yeah, it would have been better, but then again, it wouldn't have been a Christmas album. We would have had to wait till the next year to put it out. And I think that we decided to put it out when we put it out. And then, you know, it's still a very interesting slice of Americana.
Yeah. Yeah, Naughty by Nature producing on there, and, you know, Easy had a little bit of a different sound, a different flow. I mean, he was experimenting. You could tell he was going in other directions, you know. But
well,
then,
he had Rhythm D around him then. He had he had Quick, you know, and he had Tony A and Tony C. So Unique. He had some really, really strong producers around, but nobody can compare it with Andre Rommel Young, man. Nobody can compare to him. He's the man.
Yeah. Well, I remember I asked you last time you were here, if you were 20 years younger, if you'd beat the shit out of Ice Cube. You said you probably could. But if you had the opportunity to sit with him at a table, do you think you guys could talk things out and say, you know what, the beef's lasted long enough, let's just see if we can make money together? Or is that just out of the picture forever?
Well, I don't know about that. But, you know, I got no hard feelings toward anybody, man. I've lived a good life. And, you know, I've been involved with a lot of good projects. And I'm proud that, like, Ice Cube and Dre have been as successful as they've become. And I got nothing against anybody anymore. Just the guys that say that I killed Easy, man, I don't like that at all. Because that's bullshit, man, and it's just stupid.
Yeah, I heard the clip Lazy on the Jamie Foxx show. Matter of fact, we got it on the board somewhere, but I heard what he said, and I don't think you killed Easy, but I'm starting to think somebody did, because how do you go from full blown or from nothing to full blown AIDS in that short of a time span, and no children, no women.
It's impossible, man. It's not possible. So even the children that were born after he died weren't positive. Even their mothers weren't positive. Nobody was positive, man. So I believe, just like the mystery of who killed Tupac and who killed Biggie, and you saw Suge on the Jimmy Kimmel show. You know, when he was wearing that vest.
I remember he said that shit too.
Yeah, because he said to Jimmy Kimmel, he says, "Why are you wearing that bulletproof vest, Jimmy?" And Suge said, Jimmy Kimmel said, "Well, I heard all about you, you know, and this and that." And Suge said, and this was right on television with millions of listeners.
Yeah.
He said, "We don't do it that way anymore, man. You don't need that. We just inject them Easy E style."
Yeah.
Nobody
most
ever.
Disrespectful shit ever to say, you know. Especially thinking, because you know Jimmy Kimmel, you know, I mean, the man's kids, his grandkids, they're all going to see that shit, you know.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
And everybody, I remember watching that shit. Every now and then it pop up on Facebook or some shit like that. Somebody get
some people are setting
it's still on YouTube. You can still get it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on there. But some people even gone far as say it was something much higher, a government conspiracy. You know, they were ashamed that they invited Easy. Did you ever hear that theory that they were ashamed they invited you guys to the White House? They didn't realize it was y'all at first.
Let me tell you something, man. That's true. They didn't realize that it was us. The only person that realized that Eric Wright was Easy Motherfucking E was Bob Schieffer. And Bob Schieffer met us at the airport. And then, of course, in Newsweek magazine, it said, "Dear President Bush, guess who's coming to lunch?" But I got to tell you something. He was very gracious, and he took pictures with Easy, and Easy enjoyed himself. And all those politicians care about is raising money, and that's all. And I don't think he cared that Easy was there. I mean, I'm sure that a lot worse people than Easy have been to the White House, man.
Oh, yeah.
I heard the story Elvis drove up in there and handed Richard Nixon, he got this gun past Secret Service and everything, and it was a gift to give Richard Nixon. It was like some rare gun, and he wanted Richard Nixon to have it, but he snuck it in the White House. I mean, that's crazy.
I'm going to have to ask my friend, you know. I got a buddy named T.G. Shepherd who's in the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I had dinner with him not too long ago in Nashville. But he was Elvis's promotion man before he was an artist. And he lived in Elvis's house for 7 years. And then when Elvis died, T.G. Shepherd became an artist. He's married to Kelly Lang. And TG stands for the good. It's the Good Shepherd. That's his name, man. And he was a promotion man, you know, in Memphis. So, and he, like I say, he lived in Elvis's house. So I'm going to ask him the next time I see him if that's a true story or not. I have no way of knowing.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it on TV. I don't think nobody knows, but you know, on TV you can't believe anything from the idiot box. You don't know what's real and what's not anymore, anyway. So, you know, unless you hear it from the source themselves, but it's crazy, man. We got mutual friends. Woodpile, them dudes are real, real talented, man. What do you think about Woodpile?
Yeah, I like those guys a lot. There's three groups, okay, that are sort of out there now that are like really like tough guys, you know? I mean, like really men. Woodpile, there's a group called the Chimps, Chimpz, and 28 North. And I like all of those groups. I like what they're doing, because what they're doing is they're sort of combining rock and roll with gangster rap.
Yeah.
I like what they do, and they got a good work ethic, and they show up on all their dates, and, you know, I mean, they're just... I like Woodpile a lot. Where are they from? Scottsdale or something. Same in Arizona?
Yeah, from, I think, Phoenix, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I like them. I like those guys a lot. They're good guys, and I've met them several times, and we talk, you know, on social internet all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll tell you what, Jerry, let's cut to a break real quick, and then we'll close out. We got a couple callers we'll take, and we'll close out the interview. We'll go to one of their songs. This is Pendulum by Woodpile. We'll be right back with Mr. Jerry Eller. Don't go anywhere.
Watching time swing on the mission of
back with the biblical fury.
and drowning and thinking, what the fuck are you waiting for? Come on, help me, I'm pleading. I done put in my time, I paid my dues. No matter how hard you try, you'll never fill my shoes. I'm on another fucking level, the sight. Pull up the metal of ice, king and the rebel, the light. Ning in the kettle, the prince. Without a leash, the full moon and the beast. The wounds from day one, who says fuck the beast. I'm not here for your amusement, I'm here for a fucking movement. The tears, I will get me moving. The beast better get me loose, and so be careful what you wish for. You just might get it, it's a twisted up game. Don't ever forget it, I'm at the point of no return. Ain't no going back, so I'ma ride this train out till it falls off the track.
I've been waiting for so long, watching time swing on the vigil.
I'm back with the biblical fury, and nothing's gonna stop me now, I'm not in no hurry.
I've been waiting for so long, watching time swing on the vigil.
I'm back with the biblical fury, and nothing's gonna stop me now, I'm not in no hurry.
Waiting so long,
shit right there. What do you think Easy would have thought of that?
Yeah, he would have liked it. He would have signed a couple of those groups. He would have signed Woodpile. He would have signed the Chimps. He would have signed, you know, because they're hardcore, man. And he was really getting into, like, the groups like Brownside, you know?
Were there ever any groups that you guys were going to sign that you passed up on that later on blew up?
Well, we had a chance to sign 213. And which was
Snoop
Warren
and Nate Dogg, yeah.
And Nate Dogg, and we had a chance of signing them. But they were real young, and Easy was busy, so we didn't do that. And there are a few groups that we could have signed, you know, that we didn't. We did sign, you know, Will.i.am and the At-Band Clan. And he went on to be the Black Eyed Peas, so.
Yeah. You guys definitely, I mean, the amount of platinum and gold records, you know, number one release. What was it like in 91, you know what I'm saying, getting that number one release with Niggas for Life? That must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible because, remember, that was really the, you know, the first time, first of SoundScan, you know, and I think we knocked Paula Abdul out of the number one spot or something, you know. But it was really cool.
Yeah, and that record still to this day is one of the most filthiest records. I mean, it's right up there with As Nasty As They Want to Be.
Yeah.
You know, so for that to be in mainstream number one at that time, that was amazing. You know. It was way different from Straight Outta Compton, though. Did you feel that it was a different record, Jerry?
Well,
a
I thought
different vibe
that,
to it.
You know, a lot of people think that maybe that was their best record.
I do.
Yeah,
I
a lot of like people. But remember that all of our records told a story, whether it was 100 Miles and Running or Straight Outta Compton or Elfel for Zagan. They all told a story and a little different story, and I just wish that we could have turned out more records, you know, because they were really on their way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. A huge, huge thing. And you jump-started that along with Eazy-E. You know, the two of you guys made a good team, just as well as the rest of the guys, you know what I'm saying, who contributed to the releases. Let's take a caller. We got 770. 770, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? Hey, wanted to ask a question to Jerry. This is Colton John. What's up, brother? How you doing tonight?
Hey, man.
I'm doing good. I was going to ask, What if Suge took, I heard through Bluebird that possibly Suge might take a deal with Dre for the $25 million. Now, through the purchasing of the Beats.
I heard that
and
too.
How they made the transfer deal, I was going to think possibly in my mind how since Suge thinks so, I wouldn't even say ruthless because he's the evil man. And if I had the chance, I'd take him out. And I want you to know that Eazy-E's honor is going to be lived a long time after everybody's passed. And what I was going to get to is, do you think that Suge is going to take Dr. Dre's offer for the $25 million just like he did Tupac? Suge did Tupac.
I don't think that, you know, the other part of the deal is this.
Yeah.
That he would have to deliver Snoop Dogg's catalog to Snoop Dogg. And I don't think Suge owns any of that. So I think that they're just blowing smoke up everyone's ass. I don't think that Suge has anything that he has to sell. I think that when he went bankrupt, a company in Canada bought it, and then that company went bankrupt and now somebody else owns it. So I think that's just showboating. I don't think that that he has anything left to sell.
The only thing there could be, now this is just a theory, of course, there could be some old masters of some music that might have Pac on it or something that might be of value to Dre too. I mean, there's always that scenario, but who knows?
I think this just had to do with Snoop. So I don't know. I mean, it's certainly possible.
Well,
but $25 million is a lot of money, and
yeah, that's a lot of jack.
Yeah, right. So I don't know.
Dre's a billionaire, and it's you see him selling around Cuba, and you see him doing a lot of different things. And you know, I give it to you. You're right, Jerry. You know, I read your book, and you know, you've opened me up to a lot of different opportunities and guidelines to see what this is. And Andre Young is one of the best, you know, people that does entrepreneur. He's one of the best. Just
like
this
guy willing to pop Suge Knight. This guy's ready to do it. You got the power of influence.
Amen.
Hey.
Amen.
Thank you.
I'm not gonna say I'm the next NWA, but man, I'm gonna take Jerry Heller's advice and make a difference and a change in this industry, regardless of what anybody thinks and regardless of what you know things are gonna happen, because Eric needs to be remembered. And Jerry's right.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, hello? Yeah, we
yeah,
lost.
I appreciate that.
But yeah, you know, a lot of people, you know, they want to demonize you, Jerry. But there's a lot of people out there that really, you know, what I'm saying, they go to bat for you. You know, I mean, I see all the functions with the, you know, the Ruthless family. I mean, your name is always brought up, and you know, like we were talking about with Sergio and stuff. That's got to make you feel good to know that you were appreciated for what you did.
Yeah, I feel good about that. But then, you know, there's a lot of people that are still out there talking shit, so.
A lot of shit starters.
Yeah, I don't feel good about that, so.
No, not at all, not at all. You know, you're definitely, you know, contributed so much to the game. I mean, if you guys hadn't made the moves that you made when you made them, who knows what would have happened. But right now, the game is, like we were talking about Woodpower, we need some hardcore shit like that. It's looking pretty soft right now. The game is not what it used to be. What would it take to bring hip-hop back? Because right now, when you look at hip-hop, especially mainstream, you know, I got love for the underground, but when you look at mainstream hip-hop, it's almost like a soap opera. It's
well,
a mockery of what,
now,
what it was.
Hip-hop is now pop.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the hip-hop stations like the old power stations and stuff, those are all like pop stations now, and no one really listens to them. So, you know, every once in a while you come out with a Kendrick Lamar or someone like that, you know, and he does something good. So, but I think that as far as a musical force goes, you know, it looks like, you know, it's Justin Bieber's time, man.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Taylor Swift, man.
Yeah, unfortunately. We got another caller here, New York City.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Heller? It's George.
How are you?
Hey, what's up,
George? I just had a question regarding the forthcoming NWA movie. You know, how does it feel like to be played by Gonzo from the Muppets, you big-nosed Jew bastard?
Hey, who the fuck is this? Every time we get on here, Jerry, I'm sorry, we must have somebody on the Facebook in one of the groups. Every time we get on here, this asshole wants to call in.
Oh, how?
Do you want to tell this guy to go fuck himself, Jerry?
Yeah, he's not even worth talking to. You know, he's just a loser.
Sig how, you dirty Jew.
Hey,
I'm shutting
That's it.
Let me tell you something, man. Let me send you a one-way ticket to California. You won't need the round trip, okay?
Yeah, that's how we get rid of him. Sorry you had to deal with that, Jerry. Social media can be a bitch, fortunately. We had a couple of other interesting callers over the past few shows. One time we had a guy in here screaming, fuck Atlanta and fuck Islam. I don't know why. You know, he just called in and he felt like saying that. So
yeah.
Maybe the PCP is good out there tonight. I don't know.
Maybe.
Exactly.
Jerry, I don't want to take no more callers. I don't want to do that to you.
Okay,
again.
Man. But that guy, every time I call you, that same guy.
Well, we got to... go through and see who's trolling. Well, unfortunately, it's impossible. There's hundreds and hundreds of people.
Okay.
But, Jerry, I want to thank you for calling in. Is there anything else you want to add? Like, anybody wants to get your book, where can they go get it? And
well, they can get it on Amazon, but, you know, what they really need to do is get back to thinking about Eazy-E, man, who is to me the most important visionary in the history of rock and roll. Look what he did for Compton. Look what he did for race relations in this country. I mean, NWA was an important, important group, and people should revisit that group. And, you know, I'm proud to be associated with it. And like I've said before, there's nobody I've ever met that can't tell me exactly where they were when they heard Straight Outta Compton for the first time. So obviously, it was a very, very important record, man.
Yeah, it is, man. And you know, you were behind that. Props to you. You know, and anybody that goes out and sees this NWA movie, going there with an open mind, I recommend you see Sergio's documentaries, too, and you read Mr. Heller's book. And that way you can compare notes and see how accurate things really are. So hopefully they did you justice. Hopefully they did Eazy-E justice.
I hope so, man.
Other than that, anything you want to say to end it, Jerry?
Yeah, you guys are really the voice of the future for, you know, with what you're doing. So everybody should really support, you know, guys that are doing what you're doing for very little money and very little credit. So, you know,
I give you
guys props and I give you credit. And anytime you need me, you can just call and we'll talk again soon.
Man, Jerry, much appreciation, man.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Hey, while we got you on the line, can you give us a drop for the Murder Master Music Show?
Tell me what to say.
Just say, this is Jerry Heller, motherfucker. You're on the Murder Master Music Show. Whatever you want, Jerry.
You got it. This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker. And you're on the Murder Master Mystery Show, and you got to listen to it, man. I do.
Hey, thank you.
Okay, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, peace. Hell of a guest.
Yeah,
hell of a guest.
Yeah.
He's always good.
He's
like
cool,
Freeway
man.
Ricky Ross. He's real humble. And then I think he said the Murder Master Mystery Show.
Hell yeah,
maybe
Scooby
doing
it. I guess we got to get a mystery machine or some shit.
He was thinking he was watching Angela Lansbury in the Murder She Wrote or something, or Matlock or some shit.
Yeah.
Holy fuck! Yeah.
He'll play a game of Clue or some shit like that.
Yeah. No, but.
That's the first. Shout out to Jerry.
Hey,
I'm going to
use that drop. Fuck it. That's Jerry Heller.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck if he said Murder Master Mystery Show. Holy fuck. That's better than what DJ Paul said. Jesus Christ, he said about three words the whole show. Remember when he was drunk, he was on the bus, and he couldn't find the spot where the phone would get reception. He finally found it. He's like, I'm just going to stay here. And then he started moving around again. So, but shout out to Paul, though, man. He stayed with us for an hour. You know, it's still a show. I mean, it's live radio. I mean, last Sunday, thanks to fucking Blog Talk, we didn't
get to go
live. Yeah, I
was about to ask you what happened with that shit. Right, what the fuck, man?
We were going to have a
show. Did it record at all?
No, we couldn't log in. I had six try to log in. He couldn't log in from where he's at. You know, I'm in Illinois. He's all the way in fucking Oakland. So you got two people logging in. And I finally got a hold of those assholes at Blog Talk, and I got my goddamn free month for the first time in many months. We deserve, you know, free months all the time. But mark your calendars because, of course, Saturday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, whatever they call it, over there on the West Coast, KFYB.
Yes,
tune into the most offensive, you know what I'm saying, adult talk comedy show on the net. One of the funniest. Then on Sunday from KFYB, we're going to have a double episode. We're having the Church Reality with a special guest, your co-host. He's, you know, Six's co-host, the lovely Velvet Rose. She's going to speak about she's going to speak about her life in the adult industry. But the second half of the show, we're going to have another guest. We're going to actually have Jesus Ice. Jesus Ice is the money version of Jesus Christ. He's basically the pastor pimp with the Rolex and the pinky ring and all that money. We're going to talk about how churches rake in billions of tax-free dollars. And we were talking on one of the church shows, if those motherfuckers paid taxes, there would be no hungry kids probably in the world. You know, if you melt the gold just out of the teeth of the dead popes in the Vatican, you'd have enough money to feed the kids around the world. You know, I mean, yeah, come on, it's crazy already. But hey, well, we had a hell of a show. Tune in next week. I think it's on the, I want to make sure, I don't want to, okay, it's actually on Monday, it's on the 6th, man. We're having Emo come through again, you know what I'm saying?
Emo's doing
a lot of things, he's making movies, he's bringing his boy Don Blanco, and
he's the hardest working motherfucker around too, man, one of the hardest workers,
he's always
doing something, man.
Shout
out to Emo for grinding, man.
We have, you know, with the UGS shit, there's so much going on, you know, you got music, you got art, you got radio, you got audio services, you got journalism, you got all kinds of different things. It's hard to push all those, you know what I'm saying? Emo, that motherfucker, he pushes everything on his own, you know what I'm saying, and he stays afloat. He's been in it for, I met him through Six. Six did one of his covers, but he's been in it for years. I mean, the foundation of Sacramento, he's part of that whole movement. So he's gonna come on here with a couple of his homies. You know, say we like to pay homage, just like we did the Six and Skinny show. You know, that was a hell of a show to be able to interview a couple of your people. I want to shout out a few people real quick. Recently, my dad, fell sick and fell ill. Well, not recently. He's been ill for years. And we started up a little fund me page for him, and some people have been donating. I'm not going to say their names, but I just want to thank them for contributing to my father. So shout out to them. Keep doing what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? Don't let anybody try to, you know, tell you what you're doing is not right, because only you be the judge of that. That's why a lot of motherfuckers from UGS are no longer part of UGS, because they thought they wanted to run ship. We had one guy that tried to pull rank. Says we need to have a ranking system. This ain't no rank. This ain't a record label. This ain't, you know what I'm saying? It was supposed to be a place where people get together and network. You know what I'm saying? But
right.
It turned into a place where people get together and just, here's my project. Fuck your project. Here's my project. You know, it's all about me, 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 me. But if you notice, UGS as a whole was always about everybody. But you know, now, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, everybody wanted to scream it, but they didn't want to practice. Right, they didn't want to practice the shit, you know what I'm saying? They want to say they're doing it, but they didn't necessarily want to really do it, you know what I'm saying?
If people put the logos on the album covers and you know, they thought maybe that was their way of buying into this. No, man, your way of buying into this is supporting it. You know, when we drop something, buy it. You know what I'm saying? When you go to do an album, get art from Six. You know what I'm saying? When you go to you need mixing and mastering, get Jerry. You know what I'm saying? You need fucking a video work, have Emone do it. Even if you don't live in California, send him your video files and let him edit that shit. That dude's a raw-ass editor. You know what I'm saying? There's
right.
All kinds of services you can get within UGS. I think a lot of people don't fuck with us because if they're fake, we call them out. You know what I'm saying? Like DJ Gay Sex and
right, you know what I'm saying? Them the easy targets, too. They, you know what I'm saying? Like, just fuck them motherfuckers, man. Fuck them. Fuck them, prayers if they, you know, for the motherfuckers that were, because we going to meet new people. This shit ain't going to stop. You know what I'm saying? Motherfuckers going to come and go, but if they really feeling it, you won't even be thinking about them going, because they going to be doing the same shit all the time anyway. So shout out right now to all the motherfuckers who really do be supporting though. You know,
there's only a few
of them sprinkled around now, but you know what I'm saying? I got love for all the ones that really do, man.
Shout out to First Fan Radio. Shout out to Charles. You know what I'm saying? Charles, you know, Chill Jizzy, you know, his son, we talked about, his son's trying to get a medical accessible van. He's his little boy. He's only about 4 or 5 years old. We did a show on this. He has seizures constantly. And he's got a GoFundMe page up. You know, when you're broke and you don't have adequate insurance, you don't have money, you don't have a job that pays well, you know what I'm saying? You got to do what you got to do. It's either, you know what, I'm glad for these GoFundMe pages. They're helping people because if not, it's John Dillinger time. It's you know, little old lady walking down the block, hit her in the back of the head with a rock. You know what I'm saying? It's
right.
That type of, and nobody wants to do that shit. Nobody wants to go out there and just fucking do some nasty, evil dirt for money, for pieces of worthless paper. They got us all chained to the system like slaves, man. We're all slaves to the dollar. And until we can get the fuck out of AmeriCorps, we're stuck in this bitch. And if you're a have-not, you ain't got money, you're fucked. You know, bottom line,
right.
Man, don't matter how old you are, don't matter, you know, where you live or, you know.
And then even then, when you got all the money, they'll find a way for you to conform. They'll show you that the dollar ain't shit for real. You know what I'm saying? Because they'll take all that shit from you. You know what I'm saying? Or you'll be a miserable motherfucker having to do what they want you to do to keep that fucking money that you got. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's always somebody trying to impose their will upon somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Always.
And right now,
always.
If you ain't got no money, you really fucked. It's like a double-edged sword, you know?
Oh, this shit
fucked up already. And you ain't got no money? Yeah, that's all the way, you know?
This new
and everybody else just trying to work. To maintain, like, why do we be maintaining? We need to be living. You know what I'm saying?
Two jobs, you know. And this new governor over here in Illinois, this motherfucker is real bad. He's going after the most vital programs. He's cutting you know people that families that have what's that? The hematology or whatever. What's that shit called? Where they got a blood disorder. Hemophiliacs. That's what they call them.
Hemophiliacs.
He's cutting funding to families with hemophilia. You know what I'm saying? That's the type of shit this billionaire governor is doing. Now, and he's cutting a lot of shit for the elderly, the poor, the sick. And, of course, he's giving himself,
he gave himself a
$750,000 tax break. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So from the gate, this motherfucker's letting you know I'm crooked. You know, fuck your family.
Yeah, they try to either kill you out or force you to move, and then they're gonna end up having people moving. You know, like concentration camp type shit. They're gonna start hoarding motherfuckers up. You ain't gonna be able to live in a certain place if you got this or you got that.
No.
You know what I'm saying? That's what it seemed like they're trying to push too.
Did you
just
see the latest coffin?
You know what I'm saying?
Did you see the latest coffin video that they had? Some guy was filming on the interstate. tractor trailers with those big black coffins, those ones that.
I seen a video when they was on. It was a train too. And they, this
yeah,
dude
was
out
was
like out in
the
country in the woods in a train, and I'm talking about miles long train with those pre-made black coffin things.
Yeah. Those containers.
Damn.
They're like Tupperware, giant Tupperware containers for a body. Instead of putting a donut and a sandwich in there, you're putting a corpse in it. It's just a little bit bigger.
Yep.
It'll preserve the corpse long enough. That way you can resurrect it in the future. Shout out to all those who have been resurrected. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Mr. Lazarus. You know, I know he's out there chilling. Everybody else, you know what I'm saying? If you ain't fucking with UGSForLife.com, then just go fuck yourself. He's swagging.
Yeah, eat a dick.
Eat a big fat dick. We're out of here. Shout out to Jerry Heller. Shout out to, everybody that's tuning in. And shout out to everybody that's going to be putting this shit all over the internet tomorrow. We'll see you guys Saturday, KFYB.
Shut the fuck up and get the fuck out of here, you stupid cocksucker.